Blog Talk Radio.
Lucy Liu with my girl Drew, Cameron D and Destiny, Charlie's Angels. Come on,
come on. Bring it.
Question, tell me what you think about me. I got my own.
Well, hello. Welcome to the premiere of Wealthy Sisters, where we celebrate the lives of six and seven-figure women of color. Our purpose is twofold today. We want to inspire and encourage the listener, and second, to edify, promote, acknowledge, and just to say thank you to the sisters who are doing big things. I'm Deborah Hartnett, your host, broadcasting live from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Today is Monday, July 13, 2009, and starting today, we will be right here every week at the same time, Mondays at 12 noon Eastern, so spread the word. Today's guests are both known for their financial savvy, and they are truly bringing home the bacon. When I tell you they are documented, they have fat bank accounts, Ms. Judith Stevens and Cheryl Broussard. Ms. Judith Stevens, I tell you, she is a phenomenal person. I have had the opportunity to just meet her. She hails from the lovely city of Chi-Town and resides now in Seattle, Washington. And you know what? This woman is powerful on the internet. She has more than 5,000 friends on Facebook. We've got to find out from her how she does that. She has started more than 30 companies, and her consciousness is what I really want you to grab hold to today. The way that she attracts money, she is known as the money lady. She is a money management strategist. She promotes financial independence through financial literacy, and her mission is to educate people about money, wealth, prosperity, and abundance. So with all that said, hey, let's please give a big round of applause and welcome to Ms. Judith Stevens. Are you there?
I'm here. Thank you, Deborah. That was a nice introduction. And congratulations on your new show, Wealthy Sisters. Aren't you clever?
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. I can't take the sole credit. I give it back to several people who have been inspiring me in my life, and just had a great conversation with a gentleman, Mr. Andrew Morrison out of New York area, who helped put this all together for me. So thank you so much. Ms. Judith, we
yes.
are so happy to have you on the call today. Tell us now, why are you known as the money lady?
Because I talk money. I think it's one of the last coveted conversations in America. We talk about sex. We talk about people's business. We can't even let them die in peace. But we don't talk about money. And the silence around money and the intimidation around money makes us vulnerable as individuals and vulnerable as a nation. How else could a band of very not nice men have stolen billions of dollars except the fact that we deferred to their higher expertise than our own? So I think that we all need to learn much more about money, and I'm about the business of talking about money, letting people know that it is a good, it makes your life easier, it allows you to help people, that God put an abundance on this planet for you to share in too, and I want to change mindsets and change money management skills all around this topic of money and think about building wealth and enjoying your life, because that's what you're supposed to be about, and it's really hard to enjoy it when your every thought is on the lack of money.
Oh, yes, you have said a mouthful there. As we used to say back home, you ain't never lie. Truly. Like I said, you said some real interesting things there. Now, as far as the mindset and helping us get a strategy down, you know, that's something I noticed we didn't really have in school. I mean, only thing I can remember is a checking account. I remember class that showed you how to write out a check. But as far as talking about money and knowing about it, you know, we don't even disclose salaries. That's hush-hush. It's quiet. So what do you really do when a person comes to you? How do you help change that mindset and the fact that, you know, being poor or, you know, it's not okay for us to really want the finer things in life? How do you combat that?
Well, partly you combat that with information. You do discuss it. You do take it out the closet and you discuss it, because I think you're absolutely right. We are not taught about money. We aren't taught to respect it. We aren't taught to attract it. We are not taught to manage it, and we certainly aren't taught how to grow it. But there are specific strategies in how to do this, and it starts with how you think about yourself and how you think about money. If you have decided that you are worth having good things in life and to be in a position to help the people you care about in this life, then you're going to decide you can have abundance, you can have money. And there are just some basic strategies that you must, in fact, incorporate in your life to have money. You must spend significantly less than you make, you know, and we must not lie to ourselves about that process. When you are in credit card debt, it is important to understand that you are spending more than you make. You can never do anything but continually go down the little tube of poverty if you are constantly spending more than you make. It is important to realize that there's an awful lot of pleasure in saving. And, you know, maybe we start by saving 10% of our salary. Maybe we give away 10% to charity and other organizations and situations that are needed, and maybe we save 10% of our salary. But I would like everybody to get to the position at some point in their life where they're saving 50% of their salary, because we have a whole section of baby boomers who are not ready to retire. They do not have their retirement money. And to get your retirement money, you have to really get conscious about starting saving money so you can invest money.
Now, you talk about that. That is amazing. We know that the baby boomers, they are really now just, I guess, last year was the year they reached the age of retirement, the first wave of them. And what is that magic number right now if a person needs to retire and not have to go back and get a job or get a work? What would you say they need to have their hands on net income, net cash?
You know, I have no idea, to be quite honest, because it depends upon the individual situation. But let's just say you had $1 million, okay? And that you had it invested in great investment portfolio that paid you 10% a year. So that would give you $100,000 a year to live on. You're going to pay taxes out of that. Let's say you 25% of that's going to be your housing costs. You're going to pay, you know, 30% taxes, 25% is going to be your housing costs. You quickly come down to under $50,000 to live on. Under $50,000 to live on, even though you have a net worth of more than $1 million, does not mean you are living large. It means you are living very moderately. So it is important to think about, to start thinking about, what is that number for me? How is my house paid off? Do I know how I'm going to live for the next 20 or 30 years? Because, you know, we talk about boomers retiring. We're talking about the biggest population group in America, and we're talking about this big population group living for 20 or 30 more years. You do not want to outlive your money because, hey, it is not going to be pretty in America when you see all the people who are outliving their money. That's what motivates me to do this, to talk about this, not to introduce a fear factor, but to just make people cognizant and start thinking about it. Okay, if I'm in my late 50s or early 60s and I'm approaching retirement age, whatever that means, because I don't believe most people are going to retire in America anymore. We're the first generation without defined pension benefits. And even people who had pensions, they probably won't get a payout. Many of them won't get a payout on that. So most people are not going to be in a position to retire. So what kind of work are you going to be doing? And if you're not in a position to save huge amounts of money right now, that means you need to earn more money. So what are you doing to earn more money? What kind of, if you have a job, what kind of side business do you have going on? Have you thought about how you're going to create more income in your life? And you know, Deborah, I know I'm throwing out a lot of things here, but it's such an interconnected series of questions and responses that it is important that people begin to just think about these things. If I'm not saving an awful lot of money now, so that I can invest that money in some kind of assets that are going to pay me money, I'm going to be in a world of trouble when I'm 70 or 80 or 85.
Mm-hmm.
And that is average age now that people live to.
You're right. I mean, we see that today in the stores. We see that it's not a secret anymore. I mean, I remember hearing reports of some of the college towns where normally the jobs that the college kids would get, they weren't able to get them because the baby boomers were filling those positions at you know, the normal fast food places or what have you. So you're so right about that. What, you know, not to stay on this particular part too long, but you did mention, you know, suggestions for people to start a business or to create other income. Now, what made you, you know, think like this? Where did you get this? Because, like I said, we haven't been taught in school. Where did you, what happened? What was your experience growing up that made you think about money? And the, oh, I know the other question I was going to ask you too was, you know, you spoke about investments. First time, most times we think, let's go to the bank and let's put it in the bank. What are your thoughts on investments in the bank, or what are real investments that you recommend?
Okay, let me answer the first question first. Money, I think money was always a big subject in my family. But actually, lack of money, that was a big subject. When the lack of money tends to be, you know, prominent in everybody's life. So at the earliest points of my life, 8, 9 years old, I mean, I've been thinking about how I could make money. I mean, I helped my mother run a grocery store out of our pantry. I collected for newspaper accounts. I babysat, you know, from the earliest points of my life, I have been concerned with making money. When I got out of high school, I started working, and I, you know, I worked for quite a few companies, actually. I tended to leave once I was bored, which took about an average 6 months. But working for all those companies gave me a wonderful perspective on how different people lived and thought about things. Not only different people, but different ethnic groups, different occupations, different people that you would meet in various jobs, they thought about things differently. Then I was at a company as an executive secretary once, my last clerical job, and I noticed that all the young guys who came into the company were enrolled, smart guys, were enrolled in an MBA program at the University of Chicago. And that all the women, this particular company, which was really very interesting, required its female secretaries to be degreed. Well, I didn't have a degree. I lied about it, but I was a great secretary. And when it came to light, my boss fought for me, so I think I was probably the only exception to that rule. I didn't have a degree.
Oh, you lied. You said so. You did whatever you had to do, huh? You told him you had a degree.
Yeah, I told him I had a degree. I also had a 5-year-old son I had to support, and I was divorced by then. And like many women, I wasn't receiving child support regularly. And why was a degree necessary for secretaries?
Right.
I mean, I'm taking shorthand, I'm typing. What kind of artificial barrier to entry was that anyway? I mean, that's a legitimate question at the time. And keep in mind, this is a long time ago. But what it did was it gave me the exposure to who knew what an MBA was. And this was in the 70s, okay? Who knew what an MBA was? But what I did know was all these little fresh-faced white guys were being groomed at the University of Chicago to get an MBA. So that I decided that was my goal. And I particularly decided that after I didn't get a big raise that I was supposed to get because there was a wage and price freeze on salaries at that time. Again, this was in the 70s, and this was just before affirmative action. Immediately when affirmative action laws came into being, which in fact said, okay, we all have an opportunity now. Supposedly, irrespective of your sex and your color, we all have an opportunity. No longer could companies say that only women could be secretaries and go no further in this corporation. when that law was passed, I immediately enrolled in college full time, quit my job, got scholarships, got fellowships, hustled, and went to a college full time. I knew I had 5 years, even though I was taking a 6-year program. So I went to the University of Illinois for undergrad, and I got accepted in the University of Chicago for grad school in my what would have been my 4th year in college, because I didn't really have 6 years to be in college. I needed to get out of college. I needed to be making money. The opportunity cost of being in school was significant. So I did get accepted into the University of Chicago's program, and that was a 2-year graduate program in business. Great program. They kicked my natural-born rear end, but I made it through, and I made it through with good grades, and particularly given that there were very few people, there were very few black people, there were very few people who had come from public education, lower education, and I had a son, but I made dean's list. I mean, hey, it was really an okay experience for me, except that it was just unbelievably difficult. And then I did the corporate stint. Again, most of the education in this is looking at how other people think about things. Even in grad school, one of the things I realized quickly was that this system called business was alien to me. It is not something that I would put together, and I don't think most black people would have dreamed of a system like this. It was a system that I can equate to playing backgammon when my proficiency and my interest was around playing chess. Okay, so it was that different. But because I realized that, hey, this is not even personal. This is their system. They developed it. They decided the right way to do it. What I realized quickly was if I think about how I would do it and then pick the opposite, I could ace this stuff really quickly because it's not mine. It's foreign to me. And that became my like little cheat sheet for getting through because it was so alien to me. Now, the interesting thing about a master's in business is it doesn't teach you a darn thing about personal finance. It teaches you how to manage corporate billions, but it doesn't teach you anything about investing on your own. So then you're posturing because you're thinking you should know this information, but again, nobody's taught it to you. So it's been the years since I got out of business school that I've made it a mission of mine to know about money. And first there is money, then there is investing, then there is wealth building. Those are three completely different subjects, and they are on a progression. But again, nobody is really teaching you this, or if they are, it's such a little closed group of people that they're not sharing the information. Well, I can traverse those groups, and I can share this information because it is important for us, particularly sisters, because so many of us are responsible for our families, et cetera, that we get clear about money, get clear about our role in attracting it and managing it and growing it and keeping it, stop giving it away as we give away our power, and teaching our children early on the importance of money. And, you know, not to give them a whole lot of negative guilt about money, like it don't grow on trees. No, it doesn't. But it can grow if that's what we understand and begin to teach our children, that it's not evil. It is a good thing. And that they are entitled to have as much of it as they can attract into their lives. It is important how we think about money because it's going to infect our children how we think about money. And they are naturally bright and inquisitive and adaptive to the learning process if we allow them to be. I remember that my son was about 10 or 11, and one of the banks in town was going through a Chapter 13, which means I have messed up my money, but I can reorganize and come back out, just like GM is doing today.
Right.
My son said, you know, we really should buy some stock in that bank. Well, he was absolutely right. Now, we didn't, but we should have. I just think that kids, if they're exposed to the concept, are intuitively they know what's going on and how to work it if we allow them that freedom of space and information to work it.
instead of sheltering them or saying this is grown folks' business or whatever, you know, thinking that they cannot really process the information. You're so right. I noticed that with my five-year-old. I can tell her, I can explain to her, you know, this is what mommy is doing. Mommy has to make money right now. And she knows when I come in this office, she knows when I'm on the computer, mommy, you making money? Yes, that's what mommy is. And, you know, and if she wants something as a list, she has a list for me of things that that she requires. And hey, if you want those things on that list, you need to give mommy this time right now. And she goes right on and definitely follows those instructions because they do understand. Well, we're going to be wrapping up our time with you. I just was so intrigued by 30 companies. Wow.
Well, 30. I think as a consultant, you know, when you're a consultant, you can work with lots of companies and lots of people. But didn't this time go quickly?
Really gone by. It's really gone by. Name some of those companies, I guess, that you started, and what would you leave our audience with today as far as today, what we need to be doing, or a tip as far as the economy. I don't even like to give, credence to what's going on around us, but we have to acknowledge the times that we're living in today. What would you tell a sister out here today that's aspiring to become a six and seven figure earner as yourself?
Well, I would tell her to check out my website, which is yes2financialfitness.com, and read my blog because there's great information there. I would tell sisters in general that there are three basic forms of investments that they need to be saving money to invest in. That is stocks and bonds. Will anybody tell you anything other than that? One is stocks and bonds. One is real estate. It's important to remember that. Every foreclosure, we can feel for the family who's losing their homes, but that is also an opportunity for us to buy a home at a good price. And the other and the most viable investment is in your own business. So those are the ways that, you know, the path to wealth. And I want people to think about how they're going to build wealth. It is also very important for people to get this, that the Internet is a global marketplace. It's the biggest store in the world, and you need to be figuring out an Internet business that you're going to make money at. Don't rush into something and give people your money. Take the time to do diligence. That means to study what's happening, to ask around, to listen. But if you have some time that you can allocate and however much money you can allocate, invest it in a business online. One, you get to set the hours, and you get to build something that you can work at when you're 70 years old. You know, nobody wants to go to a 9-to-5 that's often a 9-to-8 when
they're
50, 70 years old. So that's what I would suggest.
Well, definitely. Thank you so much. Do you have time to hang around with us for a quick second?
Oh, I'm going to definitely listen to your next guest. That's a superstar lady.
Yes, she is, the phenomenal Cheryl Broussard. We do have a quick question here. A caller is dialing in, I believe, from the Norfolk, Virginia, Hampton area. Are you there, caller? You have a question for Ms. Stevens?
Yes, I am. My name is Inez Kelly, and I just want to say to Deborah, thank you for your guest. I have been listening in. In fact, I received your email yesterday, and I put a little timer on because this is exactly what I need to hear. I have recently launched a magazine called The Perspective, and I could have used a lot of this information in building and putting together the whole concept from beginning to end and having to generate the revenue in order to bring together the publication along with trying to live in between. And of course, you have your job on the side, but as you know, in building a business, that there's a lot of expenses, expected expenses, and then the unexpected expenses that come in making sure this sort of thing is in line and you're still able to live. So I want to say thank you, and I just want to hear more and to be able to contact you further because, again, as I said, we just launched our magazine about 2 months ago, and I'm excited about that. But at the same time, as you know, it's a tremendous expense, and just learning how to manage the revenue and where to go to get the additional revenue to help to support with that are some of the things that I'm interested in finding out about.
Well, congratulations on stepping out there. We know that you are going to be a success. Please visit. Go ahead and give her your website again, Ms. Stevens.
Deborah, you know my name is Judith. I'm Judith Stevens, and my site is yes2financialfitness.com. So you can reach me at judith@yes2financialfitness.com. You can also reach me on Facebook, facebook.com/Judith Stevens, and my last name is Stephens. And do contact me because I used to be managing director of 3 national publications. I have a background in publishing, and I can share some tips with you.
All right.
Great. And, you know, for your listeners, additional listeners, you know, I want to say that pleasure in saving, which we don't hear a lot because we always think about, you know, you're feeling bad, go out, spend your money, you'll feel better. But you're right. There is a pleasure in saving your money. That's a big thing.
All right. Well, thank you so much for dialing in. Line, we've got some great information further that we're going to be sharing with you. And thank you again, Judith. You hang on as well for us. Oh, wow. Just want to let you know that you are listening to Wealthy Sisters, and it is sponsored by the ProfessionalBlackWoman.com. Visit www.theprofessionalblackwoman.com. If you are looking for support, we are there for you. You can network with other sisters in your business and other industries as well. Also, we're sponsored by Deborah Hartnett International. Please visit us at www.deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H, Hartnett, HARDNETT.com. We are a one-source stop for all of the business developments you need, from website design to publishing, you name it, we have it. Now, it is our pleasure, and I trust that our caller is on the line. I think you might need to press 1 so that we can open your line up. We have the privilege and the honor to present to you today a young lady who, I mean, is so humble. She is so remarkable, is doing awesome things, and has just been open to my phone calls. I'm just so amazed. Michelle Broussard has been called a powerhouse in the world of business and personal finance by leading magazines, y'all. You got to know we don't just have anybody on the call. We got some award-winning authors of the Washington Post, best-selling authors, magazine, online columnists, writer, producer, and a motivational speaker. Cheryl is one of America's leading experts on business and personal finance. Listen to this now. Now, she has written 3 bestsellers, Sister CEO, which I tell you, got to get that book, The Black Woman's Guide to Starting Your Own Business, What Money Got to Do with It, How to Make Love and Money Work in Your Relationships, and The Black Woman's Guide to Financial Independence, Smart Ways to Take Charge of Your Money, Build Wealth, and Achieve Financial Security. In addition, now, she has created Cheryl Broussard's 7 Keys to Your Financial Freedom System, Cheryl Broussard's Free from Debt System, the Sister CEO Bootcamp System, and Cheryl Broussard's Instant Cash in 30 Days. I'm telling you, she has a whole list of things here. She's been featured in Ebony magazine. She's been featured in Essence, Black Enterprise. She's also been a contributing writer and also a financial advisor to the Michael Basin Show. Everybody knows who that is. Now, this is a powerhouse we have here for you. And she's also a former personal advisor on CNN, CNN and Company, and CBS Market Watch. So with all that said, please help give me a round of applause to the lovely Miss Cheryl Broussard. Are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me, Deborah?
Yes, we can. Welcome to the call. We're so excited to have you on the line.
Oh, and thank you. Thank you. I've been enjoying the show with Miss Judith Stevens. Wow, powerful information.
Yes,
I was definitely. Like, do I need to come on? You just said everything.
I tell you what, we are so fortunate to have, you know, sisters as Judith Stevens and yourself. And like I said, you know, our whole purpose of this show is to enhance or to actually to inspire and encourage the listening audience that they too can gain the dreams and accomplishments just as you all have, but also to promote and acknowledge and edify and give you all the platform and the props that you deserve, because we know that we don't have many platforms to recognize powerful women as yourself. So, again, we want to say thank you for all the great things that each of you all have done in the world of entrepreneurship. Now, we just want to get a little nosy with you because you just have such an awesome background. Why don't you tell us where you're from, Ms. Broussard?
Well, where I'm from right now or where I'm from initially, because initially I'm a Chi-Town girl just like Miss Judith Stevens from Chicago. I'm originally from Chicago.
All right. It's something brewing big things in Chi-Town there.
So, but I live now in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I've been here now for about 25 years. So it's, you know, I guess I could call the California area home, but not really. I still consider Chicago my home.
That, you know, you can't forget what home is now. Your family won't let you forget that now, will they?
That's right. Yeah, not at all. But, you know, I like California. I do miss the Chicago, that whole East Coast, Midwest vibe. So whenever I can, I'm always wanting to go back to the East Coast and the Midwest. It's totally different from the California area.
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, the each area, definitely, you're right, has their own unique flavor. That's kind of what I like living about in the area that I am now. You know, we can drive maybe an hour and a half in Philly, and, you know, you got a whole other flavor there. D.C. and Baltimore, 30 minutes apart, two different flavors there. So it's I can understand what you're saying there.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us, Ms. Broussard, what made you want to become an entrepreneur?
Oh, my goodness. It's so funny. I have a very similar story to Judith. I actually became an entrepreneur when I was 9 years old, and I do have a funny story behind it, which was interesting. I was a really big Barbie doll fan. I wanted to have all the Barbie doll clothes, the cars, everything. And one day, my mother and I went to Sears and Roebuck for something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but we went there. And so while I was there, I'm in the toy section, and there was this little outfit I wanted to buy for one of my little Barbie dolls, and it was $1. And so, of course, I asked my mother, I said, Mom, you know, will you buy this for me? And, you know, it's only $1. And she's like, no. And I'm like, what? You know, I couldn't believe it. What do you mean, no? I mean, because usually, you know, she would buy me stuff. And she said, no, Cheryl, I'm not going to buy it for you. And she said, if you really want it, you need to save up your money and you buy it for yourself. So I'm thinking to myself, I said, well, I think at the time I was getting 25 cents a week. I'm really telling my age now as a for an allowance. And I'm thinking, I said, well, wait a minute, 25 cents, four weeks, you know, it'll be gone. And I'm, you know, here I'm trying to tell her, it's not going to be here by the time I get back. And she's like, well, I'm not going to get it. So, of course, I'm crying and pouting in the store. You know, anyway, we go back home, and I can't forget about this outfit. I just cannot. You know how you want something so bad, you just can't forget about it. So I kept thinking about it, and I'm praying. I'm like, you know, God, tell me, how can I get this outfit?
So, and how old were you again?
9 years old.
Wow.
So here I am trying to figure out how am I going to get this outfit. So finally, I got a message. And the message was, well, Cheryl, what are you good at? And I said, well, you know, I'm really good at knitting, because I had really become a knitter. And so the message was, knit headbands and sell them for $1, and you can make some money. So my aunt was at home at the time. I went to my aunt, and I said, her name was Barbara. And I said, Aunt Barbara, I said, I have a question for you. And I said, if I make you a, knit you a headband, would you be interested in buying it? And she said, oh, yeah, Cheryl. And I said, okay, but there's just one thing. And she said, what is that? I said, I need for you to give me the dollar now. So she listened to this. She gets
she wants advance at 9.
Yeah. So this is all within like an hour of me coming home, okay, from that store. So she gives, listen to this, she gives me the dollar, right? I get the dollar, I go to my grandfather, and I ask my grandfather to take me back to Sears, and I got that outfit. And that was the best lesson that my mother gave to me, because what it said for me was that if I figure out how to become, to do things, I'm going to be able to have money. And after that, Deborah, I became a knitting machine. I was knitting headbands for everybody in the neighborhood. I was selling headbands on the schoolyard. I had every Barbie doll outfit, car, house, anything you wanted. Anything
you were like,
Barbie.
Well, you had it, huh?
I had it. And that was my entree into entrepreneurship. Mm. And ever since then, I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur because I associated being a self-employed entrepreneur with making money.
Mm.
So that was how I became an entrepreneur, because my mother would not buy me that little outfit for $1. She made me figure out how to get it.
Right. She made you think, which is something that, you know, we talked about earlier. We have not been really taught how to think.
Mm-hmm.
But you also said something key I would love for you to elaborate on is the association there. Mm-hmm. You associated entrepreneurship with making money. You know, the way we are programmed, I guess, or taught in our school systems is you associate a job, which is nothing wrong with it, but we associate, in most cases, a job with making money. And to think about entrepreneurship is, oh, you need to kind of let that go, or you really, you know, need to get a real job with something with some good benefits. So what is it that you think made that association so early for you, and how could you help a caller or help someone on the line, our listeners, start to change that association with that want to go into entrepreneurship, but they're just maybe afraid because they haven't made that link of actually making money.
Right. I think what happened for me, and my mother was working. I mean, she had a job, but she was working for a company that was very entrepreneurial, was a very small private-owned firm. And I used to always go there and visit with her. You know how you like to go with your parents to work. And I think for me, at a very young age, I observed what it was like owning your own business. So I was very fortunate to experience it, and I know a lot of people don't get that opportunity to see a small business in operation, because I really believe that your environment does help you to kind of mold you into how you think about things. So that was the benefit for me, and I want to encourage the callers, the listeners, you know, to expose your young children to entrepreneurship at a very young age, because that will help them, like it did for me, to be kind of associate, you know, making money with entrepreneurship. But for those of you who haven't yet experienced that, it's still not too late, because there's mentors and there's people out there who can kind of show you the ropes, can show you what entrepreneurship looks like. I mean, today it's, you know, as Judith said, in terms of like having an online business, I mean, there's so many opportunities out here today to become an entrepreneur, and it doesn't take a lot of money. You know, a long time ago, I mean, you needed thousands of dollars to start your own business. Today, you can get in for less than $500, you know, depending upon the type of business. But there's so many ways that you can do it. So you don't even have to start. You can still have your job and start a business on the side. And that's what I'm encouraging people to do who want to, you know, kind of get into entrepreneurship but don't want to leave their job and then, you know, take a chance and go out there 100% as entrepreneur. Start small and build it up and then be able to leave, you know, your job. But I'm telling you, entrepreneurship, if you want to become, I believe, wealthy in this country, it's entrepreneurship. You can't make money working for somebody else. You just cannot. Now, is it easy? No, Does it take work? Yes. It's simple. Yeah, if you follow the systems, it's a very simple system, but you just got to follow it, and you have to be very strategic, and you just have to do what it takes to become successful. But, you know, and I think people's mindset, you all talked about the mindset, and that's what's so important. You got to get your mindset right, and you got to believe that you can become successful. I think a lot of us, we don't have that thought belief. We don't believe that we can be successful and make money in this country. And I think that's why when my mother was, you know, teaching me these lessons when I was a young girl, she was teaching me that, you know what, it's okay to have money. And it's okay to want things. And, you know, as Judith said earlier, you know, you got to be – money is not evil. And I think for a lot of us, we've thought that, well, money is evil and oh, my goodness, we shouldn't have it. You know, we've heard the thing, money doesn't grow on trees. So a lot of the stuff, we've got this a lot of negative messages around money, and then it, in terms of that, we associate that with business. So a lot of us don't want to go into business because we have such a negative, you know, association about money and business.
Mm-hmm.
But business is the way to go. It's the way to
it
go.
It is.
It really
it is. It gives you that control, that flexibility, and just like you said, you know, for our mindsets, we're only limited by our thinking.
That's right. That's right.
And so no one, when you're running your own business, I mean, no one can actually say to you that this is what I'm going to pay you, this is what you're worth. You know, you got to come to me to actually get a raise if you feel like you need some more money. In mm-hmm. business, just like your mother taught you, we have to be creative and figure out how to increase, you know, the money that we need. What would you suggest a person do today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the economy.
Well, definitely, I tell you one thing. There's many things that you must do right now. I think what this economy is showing us is that you cannot have one stream of income from a job because when that dries up, that's it. And I think a lot of us are now getting that message. I think we're all going through a major growth in this country. And I think for a lot of us, it's going to change how we handle our money and what we do with our money and the things that we need to do right now. But right now, you have to watch. You got to look at your money. You need to really take a look at where are you spending it? What are you doing with it? Where is it going? Is it going into places that you don't really need to go? You need to, you know, look at all your spending with a fine-tooth comb. Get rid of the fat. If there's fat there, things you really don't need, you know, start to look at it. I had a girlfriend of mine who just had a garage sale. She said, Cheryl, I had so much stuff in my garage, and she had a garage sale and sold pretty much everything, made enough money to take a trip to Sedona, Arizona, and you know, and pay off some bills. And she said, I couldn't believe, you know, I had so much stuff, and yet I was able to sell it. So, you know, look at all the stuff that you may have in your house and your closets, and start to sell it and get rid of it and bring in some more money. The other thing is start a business on the side. And Deborah, you and I have talked about this. We have to have additional streams of income. You got to have another business because I know many people would like to start investing their money and start their wealth building, but if you don't have any money, you can't invest. So you got this has to be right now, this time period, it has to be emphasized. You have to emphasis on making more money. You can't just be living just paycheck to paycheck anymore. You have got to bring in more money, and that's mm-hmm. got to be either through selling some of your old stuff or, excuse me, by starting your own business on the side and bringing in additional income.
And, I mean, not only when someone does that, I mean, the tax benefits alone, that can put money in an individual's pocket right there, just being able to take advantage of the write-off, getting a larger refund, or being able to increase the allowances and getting a pay raise on their job just without asking the boss just because, you know, they have this home-based business or are running a business on the side. So you are so right about that.
Yeah. Yeah, this country, we actually reward entrepreneurs, and they
mm-hmm.
give you, and that's, they want people, the government really wants you to be an entrepreneur, And that's why they give you these wonderful tax advantages. I mean, you could pretty much write off everything. I mean, think about it. You could write off parts of your cell phone bill. You could write off, let's say you have a meeting in your home with your home-based business. You can write off part of your electricity bill. You can write off part of your, there's your grocery bill because you supplied some food. I mean, the advantages are numerous. Wealthy people barely pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
They barely pay because they write everything off. Their car note, they lease their cars. That's a write-off because
mm-hmm.
it's going through their business. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the way we have to begin to think in that way because that's what's going to put more money in your pocket. That's the raise that you were just talking about.
Yes. Well, you have so much information and so much knowledge. And, I mean, your exposure to the media, I mean, it's being a financial advisor at CNN, FN, and on CBS Market Watch, and also for the Michael Basin Show. How did you get yourself or brand yourself to have people to recognize you for your talent and your skills? And what would you suggest today for our sisters on the line who are branding themselves and are very talented, have great skills, but need these medias or mediums to know about them to help enhance their business?
Well, Deborah, here's what I learned early on about business, that it's not so much about the product or the service that you're offering.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the marketing. The key today for your business is marketing, and that is the whole thing about the marketing and the branding. And what it's going to take for people today to get noticed and recognized, because there's a lot of noise out there. Think about it. How many emails do you get on, you probably get 100 to 200 a day, and so that's just you. And think, well, everyone else is getting the same thing. There's a lot of advertisement out there. There's a lot of noise out there. So you have to continuously be marketing yourself, and that is by doing things such as, if you have a business, if you have a business, you have to let people know that you are in business. And how do you do that? By you writing articles, submitting them to magazines, submitting them to the television and the radio shows, because you need all of these different things in order for people to know who you are. I mean, that's why the celebrities are so big, because someone's always writing about them. They hire, people, they hire PR firms to make sure that they're always getting in the magazines, and they're in those In Style and those other star magazines, whatever those are, celebrity type magazines. They hire people just to make sure that they are in those magazines, because the more they're in there, the more they get jobs or movie roles or roles in movies and actors and all that films. And so that's what you, as an individual who's in business and want to brand yourself, you have to continually be out there letting people know that you are in business. And that is, like I said earlier, doing articles, networking all the time, sending out press releases to these TV shows and to radio shows. It's consistently marketing and branding yourself every single day. A friend of mine said to me, Cheryl, you need to be sending out some kind of marketing material to the media at least 5 to 10 things a week, whether it be a press release or just something that's letting people know you're always, that you got to put yourself in front of so many people all of the time. And that is the key. So it's not so much about the product or the service, but it's about the marketing. It's the more you market, the more you're going to have more business coming to you.
So you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I know a lot of times we see great businesses like a restaurant. I mean, they have an awesome concept. They spend a lot of money on the whole build out of the place. It's got great art, all this upscale, and they're in business. The food is wonderful, but they might be in business maybe 6 months. And then you can start really noticing some things, you know, they're not getting the customer base that they need or what have you. And I think a lot of times people put a lot of money into starting the business and they don't really organize or strategically plan where those funds should go. And a lot of times I have seen, and just in speaking with clients, the marketing piece is secondary.
Yes.
And it sounds like what you're saying, that needs to be primary.
That is primary, exactly. As a matter of fact, you should start, let's say you did have a restaurant you're going to open up, or any kind of a business you're going to open up. You should start that marketing at least 6 to 8 months way in advance before you open those doors, because you want to be able to open those doors and you want to have a slew of people coming in there to, you know, to your restaurant or whatever service you're offering. So you need to be doing that marketing like so far in advance. And I think that's what a lot of entrepreneurs are not doing. And again, it's because, just like money, we don't know. We don't understand how to do it, because we really haven't had any role models to show us how to do this. And I got to tell you, Deborah, how I came about it, I mean, it was all accidental. I wasn't strategically, you know, getting on these TV shows and radio and all that. I wasn't planning that. I mean, I got very lucky. It wasn't until after I had done all of that that I figured out, like, oh, you know, I did this kind of backwards. I probably could have done a little bit better if I had strategically figured that out. So I was kind of learning. I didn't have any role models or any mentors to kind of share with me on how to do it. Today, there's plenty of coaches out there that will help you to, when you want to form their business, to kind of get, to give you that guidance on how to get that started. But the marketing is primary, not secondary. If you're not marketing, I'm telling you, you can have the best product, the best service, the best restaurant, the best ice cream, but if nobody knows about it, nobody's going to buy it.
Nobody's going to buy it. And if you're not marketing your business, which is, like you said, primary, then you won't eat. Because you're not in your business, and your business won't be able to feed you if you don't have the customers there, which is the ultimate goal.
Right. So to answer your question, what you really need to do as an entrepreneur is you need to become the expert in whatever field or industry that you are in. And that's when you become – that's when you really become the you want to be the go-to person. So having a blog, like Judith has a blog, you know, she's the money lady. So she's the go-to person. So every time, because she's always letting people know what she's writing about, eventually the media is going to pick up on her. She does that often enough. And someone's going to say, oh, did you hear about the money lady, Miss Judith Stevens? And, you know, she writes this blog about money and how you can, you know, what you should be doing to build your wealth. Next thing you know, she gets a phone call from, you know, Oprah, or hopefully, you know, somebody else, some other, the Today Show or Good Morning America, because they keep seeing your name over and over again through your blogs and through all the other things that you're doing. So then you become this expert and this go-to person, and that's when you really begin to reap benefits from the media.
Wow. Well, that is powerful information that you've shared. I'm so excited about this show today. Tell us, we do have one question here, and I see you calling in. Looks like from the Indianapolis area. I want to just ask Ms. Cheryl Broussard just one quick question here, then we'll get to the caller's question. What was your purpose then of writing those powerful books that you've written? And tell us maybe if you could in about a minute about those books, because we want people to be able to get them and use them as the resource that you've so you know, well written them for.
I'm going to tell you as quickly as I can how it came about. First of all, I never thought I would be a writer, and that was not my intention. But one of the things that, when I started working as a financial advisor for Dane Witter, this is back in the early 80s, I was, the only African-American female, the only African-American in my office of all white male stockbrokers, and the only female for about 2 years in this office. And while I was there, I kept trying to get more African-American clients, and I was having difficulty. I said, why can't I get some clients? You know, what's going on here? And what I began to realize is that we had not been taught anything about money. And as you got to remember, I came from a background where I was taught about money. So it was very hard for me to understand why other African-Americans were not taught about money. I was thinking, well, everyone's like me. And that wasn't the case. And so I said, oh, there's a problem here. So I said, well, how can I change that? And I thought, okay, let me just write a book. You know, I never did know anything about writing a book. And I just said, let me just sit down and write a book. So it took me 5 years, Deborah, to write that first book because I was doing it, you know, half-time, part-time. But I never gave up on it. And I knew that I had to do it. It was a mission. It became my mission, my purpose. And I said, I got to get this book done. And even though it took me a long time, I was doing it at night. I'd wake up early in the morning and write. And finally, I completed it. And the funny story about it was that the chapter, I actually was going into labor as I was writing the last chapter. And so it took me another 6 months to finish it. So anyway, finally finished that first book. And was just so excited. And then after that, I began writing more because it was so well received. I thought, okay, I got to continue to write because this information is really needed in the community. And that's the reason why I started writing and hope to continue. I don't ever want to stop. And because I think, you know, knowledge is important, but the key, though, is that you got to implement the knowledge. And so it's not enough just to have to read the books. You got to really
to apply it.
Yeah, you got to apply it. So that's
well, we have 3 minutes left,
okay.
And I want to allow the caller to ask the question real, real quick, and
okay.
So that you can answer it for them. Hello, welcome, caller. Are you on the line?
Hello?
Yes, please go ahead. We have a few minutes left. You'd like to ask Ms. Brashard a question?
Yes, sir. Do you know Nadine Thompson, the founder of Soul Purpose?
I see.
Oh, yes.
I do know Nadine.
Her, yes.
Yes.
Is there a way that she can be put on the Michael Basin radio show? Or can you
tell you what?
Her?
What do you want to do for that? Why don't you reach out to Ms. Brashard? Go ahead and give her your website.
Yeah, it's actually CherylBroussard.com. So it's CherylBroussard.com.
All right. And, caller, thank you so much for dialing in. I'm sure Ms. Thompson, she's another superstar. We'd like to definitely get her on the show as well.
Yeah.
Would appreciate you calling in for her. Well, ladies, I just want to say thank you so much for your time today. Ms. Judith, are you there?
I'm here. Ms. Cheryl, you were fabulous, girl.
And you too. Thank you.
You're getting 30 seconds or less, Judith. Give us one more tip for today.
Chicago women rock it.
That's right. Yes.
I think it's got something to do with Chicago long having been the black entrepreneurial capital of America.
That's correct. That is right.
Definitely. Well, again, we want to thank everyone for tuning in. Definitely.
Thank you, Deborah. Thank you for having this wonderful show.
Congratulations, Deborah.
Yeah.
It was a heck of a kickoff.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You all made it that way. You know, definitely want to give our thanks to Ms. Judith Stevens and Cheryl Broussard. Please visit their websites, yes2financialfitness.com and www.cherylbroussard.com. Also, don't forget, the Professional Black Woman is your sponsor here today, and we'd love for you to check us out at www.theprofessionalblackwoman.com. Visit Deborah Hartnett at www.deborahhartnett.com. And also a special thanks to Ms. Sharifa Hardy for helping us out today with our show. This has been Wealthy Sisters, and we'll see you next week.
Angels, come on.
Bring it.
question. Tell me what you think about me. I buy my own diamonds and I buy my own rings. Only ring your belly when I'm feeling lonely. When it's all over, please get up and leave. Question, tell me how you feel about this. Try to control me, boy, you get dismissed. Pay my own funnel and I pay my own bills. Always 50-50 in relationships. The shoes on my feet, I fall. The clothes I'm wearing. Girl, I didn't know you.